Welcome to the Conceive Baby podcast. My name's Tasha Jennings, fertility naturopath and nutritionist. In each episode, I share with you my best fertility tips and introduce you to world-leading fertility experts to help you improve your fertility well-being to create your healthy pregnancy. Welcome to today's episode of the Conceive Baby podcast. I'm fertility naturopath and nutritionist Tasha Jennings, and I love helping proactive women and couples improve their fertility well-being to create healthy pregnancies and healthy babies through my Your Fertile Pantry 6-week online program, my private online consultations and packages, as well as my premium prenatal multivitamin and mineral Zycia natal nutrients. And if you haven't already done so, be sure to download my free Your Fertile Pantry checklist, where I provide some simple swaps that you can make in your diet to help optimize your fertility, as well as some of my favorite fertility recipes. And be sure to check out the fertility smoothie on page 11. That is a crowd favorite. And you can grab that now at tashajennings.com/checklist. And I love having amazing guests on this show to provide you with the latest fertility insights. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that you probably don't really associate with fertility. And that's histamine. Now, histamine, you may be thinking that's hay fever and allergy, right? That's what we take antihistamines for. Well, yes, that's true, but there are other nuances to histamine that can have a significant impact on hormones and fertility. And I know I've had some wonderful pregnancies eventuate utilizing some of the strategies that we'll be discussing today. So to help me unpack histamine, what it is, how it can affect fertility, and how to know if it's influencing your journey, as well as the best next steps to take, is my wonderful colleague, Sage King. Sage is a diverse-friendly naturopath and nutritionist specializing in reproductive health, preconception care, infertility, IVF support, pregnancy, and postpartum care. Sage has a special interest in supporting the LGBTQIA+ community. As an educator and speaker, Sage contributes to practitioner education on topics such as preconception care and LGBTQIA+ inclusivity and reproductive health. Sage has contributed to research alongside NICM Health Research Institute, investigating the impact of naturopathic interventions on premature ovarian insufficiency and pregnancy outcomes. Sage also provides mentoring for practitioners wanting to comprehensively support their LGBTQIA+ patients. So welcome, Sage.
Thank you so much, Tasha. I'm so excited to be here and talking about this lovely topic on histamine that we both so very love.
It is. And I know this chat really was, both of us are part of this wonderful group of fertility naturopaths who get together once a month to really discuss our complex cases and help each other get the best outcomes for our patients. And we were having a discussion around one of the cases you presented about histamine, and it really made me want to share these insights with the listeners today. So thank you for joining me and helping to share these insights.
Of course.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about how you became a naturopath and particularly, you know, your interest in fertility and reproductive health.
Yeah, of course. So it's funny because from a young age, my reproductive health and menstrual cycle irregularities is what got me into naturopathy in the first place. And then by the time I got to student clinic, I was like, oh, that's so complex. I'm going to treat anything but reproductive health. And 2 weeks into clinical practice, I had a really complex IVF case walk through my door, and I got connected through a friend and colleague to get mentoring from the wonderful Rhiannon Hardingham, who mentors both of us and runs that group. And ever since then, I just fell in love with the work, and the rest is kind of history. So, you know, I always knew that I wanted to support and advocate for the LGBTQIA plus community in our profession, because I'm really passionate about safe and inclusive spaces for all. And, you know, combining those two passions has been perfect for me, because I get to work with every single diverse person on their reproductive health, regardless of their gender and sexual orientation, and creating healthy families.
It's such an exciting space to work in, and I know you can see your passion oozes from you, and I just love that. And particularly, we're delving into, obviously we could talk on tons of topics in relation to reproductive health, but particularly histamines, one I guess we've both shared some really good cases on, and wanted to delve into it, because as we were having that discussion around one of your cases, it did make me realize it is a topic that most people do think, okay, that's antihistamines, that's hay fever, that's not anything to do with my fertility. So let's just firstly unpack, what is histamine?
So as you said, histamines are commonly known as an important immune messenger molecule that's released by immune cells that can be triggered by, you know, inflammation, infection, injury, etc. But what people don't understand, or it's not commonly spoken about in relation to histamine, is that it's a really important neurotransmitter. And we have histamine receptors located all over the body, and it has really important functions on inflammation and smooth muscle contraction and vasodilation of blood vessels and you know, gastric acid secretion. But it's also responsible as a neurotransmitter for that alertness and motivation and getting things done and regulating our sleep-wake cycle. So it actually plays a lot of different roles in the body, other than I have hay fever, take an antihistamine.
Yeah, and I think that's what people associate with, it's more pollens and histamine, but it does have a lot of other impacts on the body, and particularly when we're talking about those influences, it can influence our hormones and obviously our fertility. So I guess let's drill down into that. We're talking about it as a neurotransmitter. What are we talking about when it's involved in hormones and fertility?
Yeah, of course. So there's different pathways that histamine's metabolized in the body, and there's two predominant ones. So there's the one through our DAO enzyme, and that's through the gut, and the other one's through the HMNT pathway, and that's through our methylation pathways. And so I'm sure your listeners have heard you speak a lot about methylation,
MTHFR, homocysteine.
Right. So that histamine metabolism really relies on adequate folate and B12 and B2 and B6 and choline and SAMe. And so if we think about our body trying to break down histamine in that capacity, we're also depleting our body of all these essential nutrients that we need for healthy DNA replication and cellular health for egg and sperm quality. And as well as that, histamine is expressed through tissues in the ovaries and uterus as well. And it has a really intimate relationship, or a bi-directional relationship, I should say, rather, with estrogen. So it can potentially drive estrogen to be higher, and that high estrogen can then trigger histamine to become higher as well. So from a endometrial receptivity perspective, and that environment that that embryo is implanting into, histamine also has the ability to influence not just the estrogen signaling, but also the immune response for that implantation to occur.
Yeah, so I did a great podcast with Professor Sarah Robertson, if anyone wants to have a listen to that, in regards to the immune system and receptivity, because it is really important. We needed a healthy, balanced immune system to accept this basically foreign DNA that we are putting into our body, and to also be proactive enough to also protect that growing embryo. So yes, histamine can have an influence in that respect in regards to that receptivity. And also estrogen. And I know a lot of people think when they hear estrogen, well, estrogen's good, isn't it? Estrogen's always good, but not necessarily. Again, it's all about having the right balance of these hormones. And even histamine in itself, we do need it, but it's when the excess, or as you said, it's not being cleared properly or draining us of these important nutrients like folates and cholines that we need lots of, that's when it can have an impact on our fertility. So if someone's listening and said, okay, that sounds interesting, but how do I know if I'm affected by this histamine? What sort of symptoms are we looking at that people can look at?
Well, like anything, there's an array of vague symptoms. So it's not always going to be a direct correlation to high histamine, but I'll just go through some of the main systems that histamine affects and some of the symptomatology of those to give listeners a bit of an understanding. So from an immune system perspective, we've touched on this a lot. So things like hay fever, for example, and we think about those classical signs of like runny nose, itchy eyes, rhinitis, sneezing, coughing, and even things topically on the skin like facial flushing or itching or atopic dermatitis. And I should say as well that throughout the cycle we're looking at symptoms that these symptoms may also be transient for listeners. So because of its influence and relationship with estrogen, some people might find that their symptoms are fine in the first half of their cycle when their estrogen's low. But these may be these random sneaky immune symptoms that keep coming up in their premenstrual window. And they're like, why is it every time before I'm due for my period, I get allergies? I just don't understand. And that's really that role of histamine and its relationship to estrogen. From a nervous system perspective, we think about neurotransmitters. You know, it's it really, people that have high histamine can have a characteristic trait in the way that their brain functions, and they tend to be, you know, our perfectionist, type A, really quite hard on themselves, people that also have issues or difficulties with switching off at the end of the day. So it's like their brain's just continuously going. And that can also influence their sleep. So, you know, in some cases of insomnia or, you know, anxiety, depression, that can really present as a high histamine symptom. I want to touch on the digestive system for listeners today as well, because histamine, as I mentioned earlier, is, you know, also broken down in the gut from what we consume and ingest from a histamine perspective, and by that I mean food. And so, you know, there can be bloating or flatulence or bowel changes and reduced appetite in cases of high histamine. But something that's really characteristic of high histamine is that people may experience that random waves of nausea on waking because of its influence in the gut. And so if you're experiencing bloating or digestive concerns at all, but it is associated with this random nausea of unknown cause, then there is the potential that histamine is the underlying contributor to that. From a cardiovascular perspective, it can increase your heart rate and it can contribute to heart palpitations because of its excitatory nature. So it's quite stimulating as a neurotransmitter. And to our favourite system, Tasha, our reproductive system. So histamine can contribute in some cases. It's not always going to be the cause and it's not always going to be implicated, but histamine can absolutely contribute to, you know, menstrual cramps and pain sensitivity, can contribute to heavy menstrual flow, and it can also influence things like, you know, premenstrual symptoms, but at ovulation in that first estrogen peak. Can also influence breast tenderness and libido. So, you know, systemically, it has such a big role. And as holistic practitioners that you and I are, it's like, sure, histamine and fertility, but how is that also indirectly influencing people's fertility when it's influencing other systems and how that's feeding into their reproductive health. So yeah, I hope that answers your question thoroughly enough.
Absolutely. And I think hopefully that's given you some insights, but also understand the complexity of the histamine picture. And that's why I'm seeing, you know, someone like Sage or myself to help to unpack this for you. Because as you said, I often find in patients, it's even the nervous system that I see, not necessarily the reproductive systems that I see, but I see this nervous system impact that it's having. And that's the first thing that, you know, they'll see: reduced anxiety, better sleep patterns. I know I'm thinking of a particular patient that our next consultation is for her birth prep, which is exciting, but you know, that had a significant impact on her reproductive function. You know, had been trying to fall pregnant for 4 years, multiple failed IVF cycles, and we're not saying that's the main thing, but it had such an impact treating that histamine. She was in such a better place, and we ended up with a natural pregnancy, which is fantastic. But it's not necessarily thinking, okay, I've got reproductive systems. There may be the histamine affecting other symptoms that's having that indirect effect on your reproductive system.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it really makes me think of a patient in particular who I've been working with, this lovely couple for such a long time now, and very happy to report they have a beautiful 6-month-old baby.
Awesome.
But, you know, it really was, from a male fertility perspective, it really was his nervous system that made me go, I think histamine may actually be influencing your outcomes. And they had had, you know, multiple chemical miscarriages, chemical pregnancies and miscarriages, like, you know, in the double figures, and, you know, normal semen analysis. And when I then referred for a DNA fragmentation and went, whoa, why is that so high? That hidden DNA frag that can do that in the background. And it wasn't until we treated the histamine that the DNA frag improved from all of those mechanisms that we've discussed. And the first time that they tried to conceive naturally the following pregnancy, they conceived.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can be one of those hidden things that practitioners miss, or one of those patient symptoms that patients write off as, oh, it's just this thing that happens every month, but it can just have such a profound impact on your outcomes.
Exactly, because they are vague, and some of these nervous system symptoms that we're talking about, it's just a type A personality. It's just highly strung. It's just having trouble sleeping. It's something they've often been almost their whole life, really. So don't see it as a symptom as such. It's just when you're case taking, you know, the cogs are starting to turn. It's just, okay, this is seeming like that kind of a picture. So what conditions are we looking at that, you know, in regards to reproductive conditions, any conditions that are more influenced by histamine?
Yeah, definitely. So from a reproductive perspective, we're looking at things like premenstrual syndrome. Yep. It's connected to PMDD.
Yep.
It's also connected to cyclical vomiting syndrome. So people that have such severe pain with their periods that they vomit. Mm-hmm. And that kind of connects to that gut connection that we touched on earlier around that sensitivity and creation of that nausea sensation. But there's also been a connection to endometriosis and endometrioma, so the ovarian cysts that occur. And that's due to its role and influence, obviously, on estrogen.
Estrogen and that inflammation. And yeah, that's one thing I've seen great in regards to pain. If you can treat, if it is a histamine cause and you can adequately address that, you know, it makes a big difference to their pain. And that's one of the first things you get to see these things improving, and then, you know, hopefully in our case lead to a pregnancy, which is what we're aiming for. Now, I know there's testing that we can do as naturopaths. So let's talk about, like, if we're thinking, okay, that's sounding like me, I may have some of those symptoms. How can we check this?
Yeah, so look, it really does vary patient to patient. And of course, best assessment is made with a combination of, you know, clinical assessment of symptoms and pathology assessed by an experienced practitioner like us. But one of the key things that we can test is a whole blood histamine test. But it's important to understand that the way that we interpret a whole blood histamine test is very different to that or in the mainstream model, because traditionally, you know, we're testing whole blood histamine during an acute allergic response to see if it is actually histamine at play. But there's a lot of nuanced understanding around what that histamine looks like, because it's definitely not going to be in the reference ranges that are noted next to that test on the piece of paper.
Exactly.
And, you know, now that our listeners know that, you know, it really does affect a variety of other systems in the body, you know, we're going to use a variety of other pathology testing and microbiome assessment potentially, depending on each patient's presentation and symptomatology, to really understand what the driving factors and the causes are of that histamine overload so that we can put in the most accurate interventions to improve it.
And that's with, I guess, a lot of the pathology that we look at often say that, you know, doctors are looking for disease or deficiency. And that's great. You know, I'm married to a doctor. I work with lots of specialists. That's what they're looking for. That's what they treat. But when regards to fertility, we want things in optimal range. So as you said, the histamine, it's not going to be in the above the range, looking at crazy levels kind of range, but it's in the range that's showing that's not ideal. And when we want to get pregnant, we want everything in the ideal range to be able to create that healthy DNA, because it's not just about keeping you healthy at this stage. It's about creating a new life. Mm-hmm. And we need to be thriving, not just surviving, is what I like to say when we wanted to create a new life. So that's where the testing can come in. But the symptomatology, I know you, that plays a big role. And sometimes treatment can even be started by just looking at that symptomatology and seeing how the improvements are made based on treatment. So lots we can do as naturopaths to support this. So let's talk about some of those strategies that I guess we utilize as naturopaths if we do see that this histamine is coming into play for this particular patient. Let's talk about some of those treatment strategies.
Yeah, of course. So again, it's going to be individual to each patient. Yeah. And in some cases, you know, looking at how much histamine we're ingesting is going to be more important, because it's an issue with their digestive ability to really break down that histamine and cope with that overload. Whereas in other cases, we might use specific nutritional intervention to really help it, help reduce its activity as a neurotransmitter and break it down through those methylation pathways. So treatment-wise, from a general perspective, you know, we're looking at reducing histamine through our diet. So, you know, the foods that are highest in histamine are going to be our, what I like to call our joyful foods. So all the fermented foods. Fermented. So, you know, alcohols, cheeses, sauerkraut, kimchi, pickled vegetables that I'm obsessed with, cured meats, you know, all of those fermented and aged foods that we tend to throw on, you know, a beautiful charcuterie board when we're celebrating something, but super high in histamine, so not great for everyone to celebrate that way. And, you know, there's a natural amount of histamine in foods. It's not, you know, we don't have this ability to avoid all histamine, and it's not that histamine is bad in any way, shape or form. We need some level of histamine for our body to function optimally. But there are foods that will have higher levels of histamine than others, and there'll be other foods that may potentially influence your mast cells to release histamine more readily. Yeah. So, you know, my patients that do have issues with histamine, and it is more of a digestive type of presentation, you know, we'll look at eliminating those really, really high histamine foods that we've spoken about, but we'll also just look at their leftovers. For example, so are you eating food that you've prepped? And this is what I do too, lucky my histamine's in check at the moment. But meal prep and eat the same thing for maybe 3 or 4 lunches each week. But actually that aging process of the cooked animal protein is going to increase the histamine load of that meal. So just educating patients how they can still eat a whole food diet, but just minimize the amount of histamine they're ingesting can go a really long way.
Yeah, I did a great podcast with Dr. Gemma Evans, and her research is around, as a reproductive researcher, and her research is around diet, the impact of diet on uterine receptivity. Amazing. And they weren't linking histamine, but all of her research was showing aged foods having this impact on uterine receptivity. And I think you can bring that back to that histamine link. So that's why I think everything is as fresh as possible. And I find often people with gut issues, they may be self-prescribing. I don't know about you, kombuchas and these, these kefirs and kimchi, they're actually making it worse, unfortunately. So that's where we really got to understand what's going on with your gut. And, you know, prebiotics and kombucha is not great for everybody.
Exactly. As much as we want it to be, unfortunately, that's not always the case.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that she's doing that research, actually, because there's a lot of literature that Rhiannon has educated me about from the 70s and 90s that speaks a lot about antihistamine application to improve So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that recent research looks like.
Well, they're looking into human trials. It hasn't been approved yet, but I would love to see that. The animal trials are, you know, conclusively show that it had an impact, so we'd love to see that actually popped into human trials. So watch this space on that receptivity link. So we talked about supplements and diet. So obviously the diet we're talking about, aged foods are probably the biggest histamine ones. Or, and when we're talking about age, that leftovers left in the fridge for a while, the longer they're left, the longer foods aged for. So these are, as we said before, not necessarily unhealthy foods. These are foods like kombuchas and pickles and things that just have been aged on purpose. So anything that's been aged on purpose, including our lovely wines and vinegars and things like that, we want to be avoiding. Now, supplement wise, I know there's a few go-to supplements, and we'll firstly caveat this by don't self-prescribe. Don't listen to this and go, oh, I'm high histamine, I'm going to jump on these supplements. These supplements are things that we're going to talk about in context and need to be looked at for each individual. But let's talk about some of the supplements that we've utilized to help patients with these levels.
Yeah, of course. So if we think about methylation support with SAMe, you know, the foundation is always making sure that, you know, patients are replete in the folates and the B12s and the cholines, and making sure that that baseline of methylation is working effectively. And then there's also the potential in some circumstances, under supervision of a very experienced practitioner, to use something like SAMe. So that can really help. And I've found for some of my patients has been a game changer, but it's not for everyone. So it's really, really important that you have someone to look at it individually to you as to whether that's the right way to go about it.
Yeah, because that can have, unfortunately, have some significant side effects if you do prescribe it wrongly for yourself. So that's one that we'll caveat. Works wonderfully. And I've had some, you know, great experience. That patient that I was just talking about that's about to give birth soon, you know, that was a game changer using SAMe for her. But it was, you know, we knew that it was really well indicated for her. And supporting those levels, which hopefully you're already doing. Hopefully you listened to a few episodes already, and we know that preconception care. I know my prenatal multivitamins, Arcia, natal nutrients, as I put together because of that, because we wanted choline, we want that good methylation support with methylated B12, we want the activated folates in there. So make sure you are taking a good prenatal like Zycia that does have your cholines, your folates, your folinics, your methylated nutrients in there to support that. So hopefully we've given people, I guess, a different look at histamine, and I guess a better understanding around the fact that histamine isn't just the antihistamine that we see on the shelves. It isn't just a pollen reaction. Is there anything else that you would like to leave us with that we haven't covered yet?
Good question. How much time do you have, Tasha?
I know. I was going to say, that was really a loaded question. I probably shouldn't have said that, because we could talk for another 3 hours on this.
I know, just that if anyone identifies to any of what we've spoken about today, please go and speak to a qualified expert in this field, in that is a naturopath or a nutritionist, because they are going to be the best person to help you navigate this space. Because as you've mentioned, you know, it is like an upcoming space, and we're so fortunate to have someone like Rhiannon in our field that's really bringing this up-to-date evidence to us as professional so that we can then improve our patient outcomes. But it's so, so, so important to do it safely. But yeah, I think that's what I'll leave you with today so I don't keep talking.
Well, you're also leaving us with some other resources. And I know we've talked about Rhiannon, who you work with as well, and who runs our mentoring group. And we also did a podcast with her recently on her insights into COVID and the impact. So if you haven't yet listened to that, jump over and listen to that, because that's really obviously really topical at the moment. And it is still playing a role in fertility. It's a lot less extent now. And you also have some resources, which I will pop in the show notes. Do you want to just talk about those resources you have available for patients?
Yeah, of course. So my wonderful colleague, Josephine Cabral, and I are bringing new patient resources out this year. And so we're doing a webinar, goes for an hour, called IVF Explained, that takes patients through the IVF process and kind of demystifies the big kind of giant that IVF is for people when they step into that space and they have no idea what to expect. And in that, you know, we talk about how IVF works in relation to your cycle, what the names of the medications are, how they're working, and what to expect from a side effect perspective and how you can support yourself through that. But also in that process, you know, explaining to patients how to navigate that and what they should be asking their fertility specialist along the way so that they feel really empowered and autonomous in their body. Because I find a lot, you might find this as well in your practice, that patients come to you and they rely really heavily on you to explain this process because it's just overwhelming. So yeah, we created that with the intent to make it affordable and accessible so that whether they're a patient of ours or not, they just feel supported along that journey. And then we're following that up with a preconception care explained webinar, another big overwhelming topic that we talk about a lot, but it's just really simplifying everything similar to you've been doing with your fertile pantry. Just, you know, top foods, top cooking methods, what to swap over, and how to look at your environment in like four steps instead of, you know, an abyss of research. So yeah, just trying to really simplify everything for everyone and make it accessible so that regardless of whether they can afford to see a naturopath or not, they have some resources available for them.
That's great, because Google can be such an overwhelming space. And look, I know there's Facebook groups and all those sorts of things, which are wonderful for support, but gosh, I have to pull myself out sometimes because you're not allowed to comment and the comments going back and forth. I'm like, yikes. So just, it's great to have resources available. So I'll be sure to share those in the show notes that Sage has referenced. And if you do think that histamine may be a problem for you, first point of call would be to reach out to someone like Sage or myself and to help get a proper assessment and see how and if it's affecting you, and then the best strategies going forward to help support you towards your healthy pregnancy. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I have loved this discussion, and we will continue the discussion next time we meet, I'm sure. But thanks everyone for joining us today, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks for
having me. Bye for now.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Conceive Baby podcast. To help you move forward on your journey to pregnancy, I've created your free fertility checklist for you. This checklist provides simple swaps you can make that can have a significant impact on your chances of conceiving and carrying your healthy baby. So be sure to head to conceivebaby.com.au/checklist to download your free fertility checklist today.